From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk over, Zorba.
Cleaner air, fewer problems in kids, asthma, air pollution. We'll talk about the latest update. Fruits and veggies. What are the most contaminated produce, according to an interesting website and organization? And what are the least contaminated?
Mm-hmm. Any fruit in our recipe?
Oh, well, there are vegetables in our recipe. It's beet salad with mushrooms, goat cheese, and arugula. And I know, Tom, arugula is your most favorite vegetable that you have ever not eaten.
I could just use the goat cheese and leave out all the rest of it. That's coming up in
You know what they say, honey, are we having arugula today? Mmm, good.
Okay, we'll get to that later. Right now to the calls we go, welcoming a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
3 years ago, I took a long flight, an international flight, and ended up with a DVT when I arrived at my destination.
Oh, my goodness, that was not fun, I bet. How long was the flight? Where did you go?
I went to Germany.
Went to Germany.
Flew into Hamburg to visit family. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to do it again. Mm-hmm. This was 3 years later, and it was determined, or at least felt, that the DVT was due entirely to the flight itself and not to, you know, not to anything more than that. So, should I go again?
Of course. Absolutely, you should go again. But let's talk about DVT. That's a deep vein thrombosis.
Yeah.
And it's generally...
Well, before you do, we're in Madison. You're in Milwaukee. Why don't you just come to Madison?
Instead of going to Germany.
Because you're
That's
not
right.
You're not my son. That's why.
That is the truth. Okay,
no, so. Tom is not your son. That we know for sure. Because if Tom were your son, you would be easily kind of older than you are right now.
Now, how do you know that?
That's right. You don't.
Well, that's true. She could have gotten pregnant at 14. That would be a possibility, and then she'd still be around. Well, the answer is yes. So the real issue with that is, how do you prevent this from happening? So the treatment you were on, what happened when you got to Germany?
I went to the emergency room. I waited a few hours, which I realize I shouldn't have done, but transportation was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they took care of me. They took very good care of me at the...
Did they put you in the hospital, or did they treat
it
as an
outpatient? No, they did not. They did...
injections initially, or just pills?
Yes, they did initial injections, mm-hmm. and... Okay. Checked my lungs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a very standard. That would be the standard.
Right.
And then you were on blood thinners for how long?
I started in Germany, and of course that delayed my anticipated return home. But I stayed on them for about a year.
So, first of all, that is a risk factor. Getting on an airplane, sitting for a long period of time is a risk factor. And so what you want to do is you want to reduce the risk factor. And you do that through a couple of things. First of all, not sitting as long. And second of all, putting compression stockings on. So I recommend two things. First of all, get... and a third thing, aspirin. So number one, take aspirin. Do you take an aspirin now?
No, I don't.
Oh, I would definitely start.
I have a history of GI problems.
Uh-huh. What sort of GI problem? A bleed or stomach distress?
Crohn's disease.
So you can't tolerate aspirin? Is that what your doctor would say?
Well, I just generally advised against taking it. I don't think that means that
I don't think aspirin for a short term is going to bother your Crohn's.
Right.
I don't see any.
How much would you take?
I would take a full aspirin tablet. I would take it every day, and I'd start a couple of days before, 2 or 3 days before. You know, Bayer aspirin, or if it bothers your stomach, a coated aspirin, something like that. I would wear support stockings, and then I would make sure that I got an aisle seat. And basically, I would get up and walk. Throughout, you know, periodically, every hour or two. Not when you're sleeping. You know, when you're sleeping, it's not going to make much of a difference. But I would get up and walk every hour or two. That's it. Get on the airplane, walk up and down the aisle. You don't have to do a lot there. There are other things that you can also do, and we'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org. And these are things called heel pumps. And heel pumps are basically where you move your foot up and down and kind of get your blood going.
Yeah,
your
I did do that on this trip. I did not have support compression stockings, though. So
But I how would, often yeah, did you do it?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's it.
You know, it's hard to remember.
So, do you have a?
When I think of it,
do you have a smartphone or a dumb phone?
Well, actually, I now have a dumb phone. My smartphone should be arriving in a couple of days.
So, when you get your smartphone, one of the things you do when you get on the airplane is set the alarm on the smartphone to remind
you. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So every hour it'll go, because you know I've been on those long flights. You kind of want to get your brain away from the flight, and you don't remember the time, and you're kind of thinking something else. So that's what I would do. Support stockings, get up and walk around. The reason I mentioned the aisle seat, it's going to be easier if you're in the window seat and you've got to get past two others. Or maybe you're going to fly first class to Germany.
Well, because of how dreadful these flights are, the last time I went, I did get a business ticket.
Well, and business class,
they're not happy with you for getting up these days.
Well,
you know,
but in business class, no, they're okay. What you do is you identify to the stewardess right away in business class,
or the steward. Yeah.
You say, "I had a DVT. I'll be getting up every hour and moving around."
And you also say, "This is how much I paid to sit here."
Yeah, that's right.
You'll do it.
That's right. Let me give you the receipt for the bill for the tickets. That's exactly
right. The loan I've taken out.
And there you go.
A second mortgage.
Yes, go see your son. Absolutely. Yeah. How long is he lives there full time, I take it?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you FaceTime him all the time?
No.
Why not?
I don't.
You've got to do it when you've got a smartphone.
Well, I don't have a camera. I don't have a camera on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started this, or when they first went over there, there were just so many technical problems, we sort of gave up on it. Phone rates are so low now internationally.
But I have to tell you, FaceTime is great. I just FaceTimed my daughter, Didi, who's in Malawi. Working at in a Peace Corps type situation with her boyfriend, who's also in Malawi. He's another doc. And we FaceTimed. I mean, all we did was push a button, and we FaceTimed. And when that failed because of the connection, we went to something called Viber. She's holding her phone. I'm holding my phone. And it's a George Jetson situation. FaceTime your child. You'll love
it. With my new phone, that just might work.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome to the 21st century.
Yes, thank you.
Take care.
All right. Thank you for your help.
You are.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I don't want any of that 21st.
No, you don't. Stuff. You're not interested.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, cleaner air can mean fewer lung problems in children.
Well, especially in asthmatics. So let's look at the study. But before that, this is a big issue. One of the things had to do with lead. And remember cars with lead gasoline?
Yes.
I have an old Miata, which is the first Miata that came out in 1990. And it says on the car, unleaded fuel only.
Yeah, don't ever ride in Zorba's Miata.
Yeah, that's right. If you're
taller than 5 feet.
You didn't like that. That's right. Tall with long feet. It was like,
down.
That's part of it. Part of it is crunching yourself down. But anyway, one of the issues that they found was lead was in the environment in inner cities. And it took years before the government could basically get lead out of gasoline. And somehow the cars are still running and we've got better gas mileage than ever. And we don't have lead in our gasoline, so we don't have the pollution that made a difference. Well, pollution is a big issue. Southern California, big pollution. When I was a kid and I went there, my mother's sister, Aunt Belle, and her grandmother moved out to California. And I remember I went there at the age of 12, and they said, well, you can see the mountains sometime, but you couldn't because of all the pollution in the valley. So air pollution is a big issue, but they have improved things. So researchers followed three groups of kids in Southern California from 1993 through the year 2000. So they looked at different times. They looked at third graders and fourth graders. They looked at them over 10-year periods, 1993, 2003 to 2013. Mm-hmm. And they looked at the amount of ozone, nitrogen, dioxide, dioxide and particulate matter in the atmosphere, and they looked at children who were asthmatic and non-asthmatic and looked at whether or not they went to the emergency room, whether or not they needed treatment. And lo and behold, children with asthma had a 32% reduction in symptoms when there was less ozone, less carbon dioxide in the environment, less nitrogen, and less particulate matter. Hmm. And the cleaner they made the air, the fewer exacerbations of asthma that they saw. Now, they didn't see a difference in respiratory infection in non-asthmatic children. But asthmatic children are sort of the canaries in the cage. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be the most likely to respond to this. So air quality clearly makes a difference. And it makes a difference in these children.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
When you start to do that, that is clean up mm-hmm. the air, there's always a little controversy. Why should we spend this kind of money? Why do we have to do this? Here's an example.
Oh, no. Here's a very good example of where you actually get an effect. Now, what it does with chronic lung disease, they didn't measure, like COPD, which is mm-hmm. always one of the top five leading causes of death. And we know that when there's an ozone alert, a nitrogen alert, a particulate alert, it's COPD. But I want to put another connector in. Mm-hmm. As you know, I am not pro e-cigarettes. I think that e-cigarettes are really a problem. It's sort of bait and switch. We're going to get you off of cigarettes and get you onto something else. E-cigarettes are air pollution on a personal basis. Mm. You're putting something that is not good, clean air into your mouth, sucking it in, and saying, this is okay for me to do. And the reality is, there are no studies that look 10 and 20 years out that show that it is okay for you to do. This study shows that any kind of pollution in your lungs can produce problems, certainly for asthmatics, and I think for others too. So if you use e-cigarettes, think about it, and please send me your emails, you e-cigarette users, on how much you love e-cigarettes. I love to get them.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, Walland, Tennessee is with us. A caller is with us now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, how can we help?
I have a really off-the-wall problem. I have venous insufficiency in my legs. And as you know, they tend to swell, and my left one in particular is really, really bad to swell. Well, we've tried to control it with diuretics. We've tried to control it with compression stockings. We've tried to control it with elevation, and none of that works. The only thing that seems to work is, well, my cat will come up and kind of scratch, and that lets the fluid go, and that's what relieves it. Hmm. There has to be a better way.
Yeah. Tell me again what you have exactly.
It's called venous insufficiency.
Mm-hmm. So you've got varicose veins in your legs?
Oh, okay.
Is that what you do?
Yes, you've got varicose veins in your legs. So the cat is the only treatment that works. So in other words, so we now have cats as treatment for venous insufficiency. So your cat rubs up against your leg or scratches your leg and then...
Scratch. That's what's really strange. He comes up and it's like he'll rear up on my leg, but he doesn't really. I suppose he does make a small puncture, but you can't really tell it. It's just like my leg is so swollen that the barest touch of one of his claws will puncture the skin.
Well, you know something? That's very interesting. Another alternative remedy. Have your cat, if you've got venous insufficiency, have a cat in the house, and the cat will help. Well, you know, when venous insufficiency gets bad enough, then you need treatment and surgical treatment to basically take care of the veins if they're that bad. I mean, that's what I would recommend. If they're small veins, there are injections that you can have to actually reduce the small veins so they don't bother you. But if you've got big veins, I would recommend that you look towards treatment, vein stripping. And that, you know, that is a common treatment for this when the compression stockings and elevation don't work. So that's what I'd recommend. Have you thought about that?
Never heard of it.
No, there definitely is a surgical procedure. It's very effective. It works. You want to go when you pick a surgeon. You have a family doctor or who do you have? Who's your? So I would talk to your family doctor. would say, who do you recommend for surgery? And then I would go and get an evaluation, and I would pick somebody who does a lot of these. There's some surgeons that do a few, but you want a surgeon that does 10 to 20 of these a year. I mean, that's the number. Okay. The magic number is at least 10, but 20 is even better because then they do it all the time. Surgery is a medical practice. But yes, if you're still bothered, I would have surgery. Very effective. Works well. You may still have a little swelling even after the surgery. It may not be 100%, but if it gets to 95%, usually people tolerate that little bit of swelling that might be left very, very easily.
She always has the cat.
Yeah, you always had the cat. That's right.
Well, somebody had, a friend of mine had asked me if I'd considered something called lymphedema.
Well, lymphedema means swelling in the legs from lymph glands that may be swollen. And there can be a treatment for that too, which can be, once again, it's compression stockings. Good compression stockings work for lymphedema. But I think I'd go get an evaluation for this. If you've got varicose veins that you look at, get it fixed. It might work.
Okay, then. Well, I appreciate your help.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Before we take a break, Zorba, it's time to break out your robe and gavel for another episode of Judge Zorba.
How do you like that? Today. Let me do it again.
That's very... Okay. Are we done?
No, one more time. Okay, now we're done.
Today's case comes to us from a longtime listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who writes, "Hi, Tom and Dr. Zorba. I need your opinion about a doctor's attitude during an office visit. He trivializes the wellness visit prescribed by Medicare. The multi-page form that I completed was not reviewed in my presence. The term Medicare comes up frequently in a negative sense, as in, Medicare wants this done. I don't know why. Or, if a test is being considered, he said he'll have to fudge a good reason for it, or Medicare won't pay. This behavior concerns me and makes me think that it might be a good idea to find another doctor. I feel that I've really lost confidence in this man. I'd like to know what your thoughts are. Thank you. We listen to and enjoy your program every week."
Well, it's very nice. So, okay, the judgment. Switch doctors. That's the judgment. I would recommend. So let's talk about the Medicare visit. There's a reason. The Medicare visit is a wellness visit, and that's where you go over things you normally don't go over. So when I do a Medicare visit and I have a guy who's an older guy, one of my first questions is, who cleans the gutters in your house? And the reason is, if they say, I get up on the ladder, I say,
that's a real
no, that's not a great idea, unless you have somebody else with you, because you're looking for other things. And it also, part of the Medicare visit is, do you have a durable power of attorney for health care? If you don't, here's some information. Do you want a loved one to make a decision if you can't make a decision, or do you want the government to make the decision, such as the legislature? And as you know, with Terry Schiavo, the legislator made the decision. The Florida legislature, the U.S. Congress, they all made the decision, and then the Supreme Court, in their wisdom, threw it out. That's part of the Medicare visit.
So when should a person have that?
Well, roughly once every year or two you have it. It's a preventive care visit. But I want to get one more set before
I
go
back. I'm sorry.
The other thing is, fudging something so Medicare pays for it is fraud. You can't actually do that. You can't order a test unless you have a reason for it. And the reason for it has to be justified. So if you have to put in an incorrect diagnosis, i.e. fudge it, because it has to be justified, we call that fraud, and you don't want to do that. In other words, if there's not a good reason for the test, don't do the test. So once again, I take my gavel and I say, switch doctors.
Fire the doctor. Have a debate you need settled? Add your case to Judge Zorba's docket by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. Of course, you can always post it on Facebook. I was going to say Facebook.
Okay, our recipe is coming up, and more of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster as well, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But now, Zorba recipe time. Beet salad with mushrooms, goat cheese, and arugula.
You know, I can just tell from the way you're saying that, that this is a savory recipe, and you can't wait for it. Is it, what's your favorite thing here? The beets, the mushrooms, the goat cheese?
I'll just do the goat cheese.
It's not arugula? I thought it would be arugula.
It's not beets and it's not mushrooms.
I think the ideal food for you would be arugula and tofu, an arugula and tofu salad, which actually doesn't sound too bad with a little soy sauce and ginger.
Oh.
No, that actually would be good.
Is that our recipe?
No, it's not. Moving right along.
Beet salad with mushrooms,
goat cheese, and arugula.
Yeah.
Start out with mushrooms, 12 ounces of mushrooms sliced.
12 ounces of sliced mushrooms.
Now, you could use any kind of mushroom you want to. Generally, we use button mushrooms because they're around. But when my wife, Penny, and I were in China, we went to a mushroom and bamboo forest where we had a variety of different kinds of bamboo shoots. You know, we only kind of get one kind in a can or fresh. But there were maybe 100 different kinds of mushrooms and fungi that the Chinese eat. And they have different textures, and they're really, really tasty.
Hmm.
But I would use any kind of mushroom you like. You're going to use some, of course, kosher salt and pepper. 10 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
10 big T extra virgin olive oil.
Some baby beets, about 24 baby beets. Mm-hmm. You're going to trim them. The greens are going to be reserved for later use. So keep the greens.
Mm-hmm. Baby beets, greens trimmed and reserved for another use.
A large shallot minced.
Large shallot minced.
3 tablespoonfuls of sherry vinegar.
3 big T sherry vinegar.
Teaspoon of Dijon mustard.
Little tea Dijon mustard.
Arugula, 5 ounces of arugula.
5 ounces of arugula.
And 2 ounces of crumbled goat cheese.
Crumbled goat cheese.
So here's how we make it. I know that you are ready for this recipe, Tom.
This is your bated breath.
Preheat the oven to 450. In a bowl, toss the mushrooms, a little salt and pepper, a couple of tablespoonfuls of the olive oil. Transfer to a baking sheet. Then, in another bowl, toss the beets that are sliced with salt and pepper, 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil. Wrap the beets in a large piece of aluminum foil and place on the baking sheet. Roast the mushrooms until they're browned and softened, about 15 minutes. Roast the beets until they're tender with a knife for about 30 minutes. Remove from the oven. When the beets are cool enough to handle, peel them and cut them in half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your beets are going to be cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
Then in a small bowl, whisk together the shallot, vinegar, and mustard. Slowly whisk in the remaining 6 tablespoonfuls of olive oil. Then season this vinaigrette with a little sauce and pepper. Then in a large bowl, toss the mushrooms, the beets, the arugula, the vinaigrette, top with some goat cheese, and serve.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the goat cheese, put it on a ham sandwich.
The best of it. But for those of you who like arugula, and I like arugula in its place, go to ZorbaPastor.org. Look at this recipe. Find other recipes. Look at Tom and I, ZorbaPastor.org. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook. And keep up Facebook. We have so many people looking at the Facebook page. It's really pretty amazing. So find us on Facebook. And if you want to like us.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413, and a Dodgeville, Wisconsin listener is with us now. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thanks for taking the call. My problem is that when I lie flat on my back, I'm unable to put my head all the way to the floor without feeling nauseous or lightheaded. For example, I can't do yoga.
Mm-hmm.
4 positions without this discomfort, unless I use a block.
Uh-huh. So now, when your head lies flat,
yes.
Do you have trouble going to sleep at night? Lying is your neck stiff? Is that why? Is that part of it?
Well, I don't have trouble sleeping or mm-hmm. going to sleep. I have to be careful and always lie on my side.
Mm-hmm. What happens if you lie on your back in bed?
Well, my wife would say I snore too much, but I do generally have a stiff neck. Mm-hmm. That's another, that's part of the issue.
Any medicines you're on?
Yes, I do have atrial fib, and I used to take a beta blocker, but I don't take a beta blocker any longer. I do take warfarin.
Mm-hmm. You're on warfarin right now? You're still on
warfarin? Yes, I've been on warfarin for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I also take a Synthroid mm-hmm. for a hypothyroid.
So I wonder if this is the AFib that's causing you this, this sort of dizziness. Well, it's not dizziness, as you said. Mm-hmm. It's sort of faintness when you lie on the ground. And so the only time it functionally bothers you is when you're trying to do yoga.
Well, that's correct.
So, do you love yoga? Are you and yoga sort of intermixed together as an important part of your life and your routine in the morning?
Well, I do yoga because I do have this stiffness in my mm-hmm. neck. It's kind of a chronic issue and soreness.
So it helps you. It helps you with your neck. Well, the first thing out of the box I would think about, there are a few things. If the world were spinning,
yes.
then it would be an inner ear problem, a problem that can be taken care of through a physical therapist. There are a variety of maneuvers that you can actually do to help improve things called Epley maneuvers. But the world would be spinning. Mm-hmm. This may be due to the atrial fib. It could be due to you're on any other medicines besides that. You're not on a beta blocker. That would be one thing that could cause it.
Yeah.
Does it get better over time once you lay down, like over a minute, 30 seconds or a minute?
Yes, I can reduce the, I can take the block out from under my head or reduce mm-hmm. it to a smaller towel.
Yeah.
And that helps. Now, my family doctor did x-rays mm-hmm. on my neck, and he believes it's maybe arthritis.
Mm-hmm. Well, the pain may be arthritis, but I think the faintness may be from your atrial fib. I mean, I think, or a combination of both. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a lot of pain, and then what you want to do is change your exercise program.
Okay.
I mean, that's, you're not doing this as a job.
No.
You're doing it to make yourself better. And if you've got to be on if your head has to be up on a pillow to do it and you reduce it, then you functionally do that. And you say, hey, I know the first time I do it, I'm going to feel a little bit faint. And then after a while, I'm going to be less faint and less faint and so on.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I think I would blame it on the atrial fib. But you might have arthritis, too. Well, it sounds like you do because you have pain. Tom used to have some dizziness. Do you still have that?
I was going to say, I'll piggyback on this caller.
Yes.
I still do. I'm doing a bunch of throat exercises, mm-hmm. and one of them is lying on my back and bringing my head up and putting it back mm-hmm. down. And I just get totally dizzy. Mm-hmm. And I've got an appointment with an inner ear guy coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm hoping that will fix it.
But I also, when I lay down, when I do exercises, if I lay down on a mat initially, the world spins a little bit, and I feel a little bit, I feel a little bit faint. It goes away in about 5 seconds, and I've just adjusted to that 10 seconds, and I realize that's part of what I do. And frankly, I don't do as many floor exercises because of it. I don't like the feeling.
I've had a physical therapist, in fact, two of them, try to correct this,
so,
and it just gets worse.
So if you notice, Tom and I have the same problem you have.
I'm not alone.
So you're not alone.
Yeah.
And if we leave you with anything with the call, you're not alone, and we probably will get emails of other people, and they might even send us suggestions on what they do when they're trying to do floor exercises mm-hmm. for dizziness. I would welcome any emails or Facebook page entries on this. Thanks. Thank you so much for your call.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
I wake up every morning and my hands are swollen and they ache in the joint. I've had chondrocarditis mm-hmm. and inflammation in the bursas in my hips and my feet are swollen all the time, too. And I take ibuprofen sometimes. I'll take the naproxen, but I can't take that stuff all the time. And I'm trying to figure out what in my diet or lifestyle changes can I make to reduce
sure.
this inflammation.
It must really bother you to have this all the time. It must really interfere with your
yeah.
life. How long has it been going on for?
It's been going on for about a year and a half now that it's been really bothering me.
Okay, change in lifestyle? Any change, job change, anything else going on, stressors in your life?
Well, I'm working, which is actually not a stressor. I love my job.
Uh-huh. What kind of job do you have?
I work for Habitat for Humanity.
Cool.
So I love it.
Cool, cool. Yeah, it certainly is wonderful. Okay, so you've got a job that you like. Physical stresses, recent illnesses, anything that might be going on?
No, not recent illnesses. I do have fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
That's really about it.
When you say inflammation, you mean you're really talking about pain? I mean, is that really, are those really the symptoms that you have?
Pain and swelling.
Uh-huh, and swelling, okay. Because fibromyalgia itself can produce lots of pain. We don't just have trigger points, but you can get pain in all over in your soft tissues when you're fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could be enough to explain the chronic pain that you have. It wouldn't explain the swelling, but it certainly could explain chronic pain. What do you do for exercise? Are you able to do any exercise at all?
Yeah, I walk my dog, and I just recently started weightlifting.
Uh-huh. One of the things that exercise I want to get to is the type of exercise. Tell me about your sleep patterns. Get up in the morning. What time do you go to sleep? What time do you get up?
I go to bed between 10 and 11, and I'm up. The first alarm goes off at 5 a.m., but I don't get out of bed till about 5:40, 6 o'clock.
Okay. Well, I've got some suggestions. These really are suggestions that I think have a lot to do with chronic pain. One aspect with chronic pain is exercise. You've got to find an exercise plan that works for you. One of the best exercises for chronic pain are water exercises because you're eliminating a lot of the issues with gravity. You're moving the joints in a warm water pool, and you may want to look into that. That can do marvelous things.
She lifts weights. That's not good.
Well, weights might be okay, but they might not be. Weights are not the first thing you think about with chronic pain. The first thing you think about is, what can I do to soften up my ligaments, stretch the ligaments, the tendons, the muscles, and the nerves? And weightlifting does not do that. Weightlifting might be part of a good program, but really what you want are range of motion activities. So I would recommend, number one, looking at some kind of water aerobics and giving it like a trial. You may be able to join a health club which has a warm water pool for 3 months, see what it does. I would not sign a 2-year contract, which they always want you to sign, but I would look at something like that. That's the first step. You're right about not using anti-inflammatories all the time. You only want to take them for a limited amount of time. You certainly don't want to be around them all the time. The second thing I look at is sleep. Sleep and being in bed is critically important, and often Americans do not get enough sleep. And I don't think 6 to 7 hours is enough. I think it should be 7 to 8 hours. Even if you're in bed relaxing and reading, there's something about shutting off the outside part of the world, sitting in bed, shutting off the television, shutting off the computer, shutting off the cell phone. The smartphone can be a dumb phone when it comes to keeping you awake, and looking at sleep. I think that's really an important issue. I think this is related to your fibromyalgia. I'm not convinced that this is inflammation, because with fibromyalgia, there's no evidence of inflammation. We just know there's evidence of pain. We know there's pain, there's discomfort. We know that it's real. But if we look at the muscles and the ligaments under the microscope, we don't see inflammation. It feels like inflammation, but it's not necessarily inflamed. You need warm water aerobics and more sleep.
Okay, those are definitely lifestyle changes.
They are, and that's the way you treat this. So thanks much, and keep up the good work with Habitat for Humanity. That's really a kudos to you for doing that.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Take care.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. This tip actually...
I have to tell you, I laugh all the time when I
always want to sing along, but
so
I don't think our listeners
would
like
I don't think so either.
This tip actually comes to us from a lesser-known division of the Grammar Police, the Pastafarians.
The Pastafarians?
This mildly saucy email comes from a guy named Gino. He writes, "Hello. I'm a friend of Zorba's, and I've tried over the years to help him with his pronunciation of the term for cooking pasta, al dente. Every time he pronounces it El Dante. I get calls from Italian friends and family to say he did it again. He pronounced it El Dante. This is my tip for Zorba, so he will never forget, as told to me by one of my Italian brethren. Tell the good doctor that if he pronounces it wrong again, al dente his head. I'd hate to have something happen to my good friend, so please pass this along. All the best.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Gino is a friend of mine. Gino at the movies in Milwaukee. That's exactly what he does, and he also does it for one of the satellite companies. He's great. He's a movie critic. I promise, el dente.
I hope he does an al dente in your head. Hey, listener. A penny for your thoughts. Post your thoughts to Facebook and send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. We have an interesting topic to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, and our medical myth buster later on here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More calls coming up, but first, Zorba, new fruit tops the Dirty Dozen. That's a list of the most contaminated produce.
Well, it's the Environmental Working Group, and they are a group that's interested in pesticides. You know, they're a group that says things should be organic and pesticides are bad. And, of course, they're right. Organic means there's certain pesticides that you're allowed to use, but there are organic pesticides that you use. And the issue is whether or not these are bad for the environment, whether or not they're bad for us individually. And so they publish a list pretty often. We've done this list before. And what they do is they take the information from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the FDA that does analysis of pesticide residue.
And this list is in order of contamination.
Yeah, order of contamination.
Most contamination.
So strawberries are number one. Okay, so they're the most contaminated, fruit. And so the issue with is, first of all, when we look at these, and we'll do some others, are will washing get rid of it? Well, washing fruit is really important as well as washing vegetables.
Yeah.
And will it get rid of 100% of it? Probably not, or maybe, I'm not exactly sure, but it'll get rid of a lot of it.
We have strawberries in the fridge. Mm-hmm. My wife washes the strawberries when she uses them.
Yeah, so it's
It's
going to get. Yeah, well, that's why you are the way you are, because you don't wash the strawberries. Who knows?
Am I not going to make it through the rest
well,
of
but,
the
but,
show?
Well, but the issue with is not just pesticides. If we look at the most important issue, it's contamination from E. coli and other things. That's where we have roughly 100,000 people or more who are hospitalized from foodborne illnesses. And believe me, pesticides are only a tiny part of it, if any part of it at all.
What are some of the things?
Yeah, so strawberries, apples, nectarines, peaches, celery, grapes, cherries, spinach, tomatoes, sweet bell peppers, cherry tomatoes, and cucumbers.
Uh-huh.
They were the list of the bad
ones. I'm looking at veggies, too.
Yes, and let's look at the clean ones. Avocado. Yeah, well, I don't need the skin on the avocado. Sweet corn, pineapples, cabbage. I hope you're memorizing this. Are you memorizing? It's on the test. Onions, asparagus, mangoes, papaya, eggplant, honeydew. I could just go on the list, but nobody's thinking about the list anyway. The real issue is pesticides.
Yeah.
If you are concerned about pesticides, then you should get organic food. If you are not concerned about pesticides, you should at least wash your fruit, because washing your fruit will reduce the amount of pesticide, because most of it is on the surface. One of the issues, another way of taking care of the issue, is through a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, where during the season you belong to a farm and you belong to a farmer that uses fewer pesticides. Mm-hmm. And simply reducing the amount of pesticides that you get in contamination may make a difference in your health.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good day. I've been blessed with a long life. I'm 91 years old.
Oh, that is a long life.
Still in pretty good health, I think. But I'm disturbed by the fact that I have a frequent urination.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And I've gone to a urologist, and she gave me a pill to take. It didn't work, didn't do anything. And I'm convinced that my bladder is being emptied when I do urinate.
Mm-hmm.
But I get up during the night, and this has been going on for years. Now, I have not wet the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. But I wake up a minimum of three times during the night.
Mm-hmm.
And normally go back to sleep, and sometimes I'll wake up as much as five or six times a night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disturbing.
Oh, of course. You're not sleeping through the night. It's a common problem as you get older, for men especially, but also for women. So you've reduced the amount of liquid you're drinking at night. Have you done that?
As a general rule, yes. I would have a Manhattan, should I say, before supper time.
Mm-hmm.
At supper time, and I would not have water after supper.
Okay, and then what time do you go to sleep?
Pretty early, about 9 o'clock.
When do you finish the dinner? I'm trying to. The issue being, liquids. You want to reduce your liquids for 2 to 3 hours before you go to sleep. That is something that may work. Number two. Is your prostate enlarged? Does your urologist think you may need surgery at all?
I went through a study at the university, and I did have radiation 30 consecutive days or something like that.
For what?
For prostate.
Did you have prostate cancer? That's what you would have radiation for.
I don't honestly remember. That was like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, you should get that information. You should consider one of several pills. There's not just one pill these days. There are about three or four pills, all of which might help you so that you reduce the number of times you have to urinate from 3 to 1. You know, if you get it down to 1, that would be good. So I'd recommend trying several different pills, urologist, you know, finding out what you had done before, seeing whether or not you had residual urine now, which means that a prostate surgical procedure, such as a laser procedure or a TURP, which essentially sort of cores out the prostate, will allow you to empty your bladder more. All of those things might lead to the fact that you can then sleep for longer periods of time. So I would look at the prostate, I'd find out what happened, and then I would try the different pills. But limiting your fluid can make a difference. And you've got to do it. If you get scattered sleep, it can affect your whole life,
mm-hmm.
especially in your 90s. And that sleep is really important for your brain to continue with your brain development. One last thing. Do you sit down in the toilet when you urinate?
No, sir, not yet.
You should try to do that. You will be much better you'll empty your bladder more in the evening if you sit down on the toilet and you give it a little extra time. You'll get a few extra squirts out, and that may be very useful. I would try that, too.
Well, is it unusual? I went to bed probably at 9 o'clock last night, and I woke up. I went to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and I woke up at 10:15, and I had to go titty.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may be that you didn't empty your bladder at 9 o'clock. If an hour and 15 minutes later you have to go, then you didn't empty your bladder, or you drank too much. So sit down on the toilet, sit there, empty the bladder, let the water run, and see if you can get out more urine. That's the issue. I bet you've got some residual urine in there, and that's part of it. Okay.
Fine. If that's the case, I'll run that past a urologist.
Yeah, well, that'll be the easiest thing. You can just sit down in the toilet tonight and run it past yourself.
Huh. I want to try that, sir.
Well, take care. Let us know what happens, please.
All right, I will try.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. Okay, Zorba, time again now for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question is from a listener, Lynn, in Holcomb, Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Zorba and Tom, recently I've seen articles that revisit the debate on whether full fat, low fat, or no fat dairy is more healthful. Researchers at Tufts University assert that the incidence of diabetes may be lower in people who consume full-fat dairy products. And according to Swedish researchers, obesity rates may be lower among those who consume full-fat dairy. I must admit that I would really, really, really love to add whole milk to my coffee and use full-fat yogurt in smoothies. Before I do that, however, I would like to hear your thoughts on this topic. Can you demystify this possible low-fat myth?"
But of course, I use cream in my coffee. Life is too short to use skim milk, 1% or 2%. I use cream in my coffee. And you know what? I just take care of the fat somewhere else. And when it comes to yogurt, I've gone to full-fat yogurt instead of low-fat yogurt because I find I like it, but I have less of it. And that's the issues that the research shows, that for many people, full fat is more satisfying. So the number of calories that they eat actually tend to be less or neutral because they're not eating other things that are often put in products to make us feel like we're getting something. So if you look at low-fat yogurt, it's often either filled with sugar or sugar substitutes to make it taste better. And for me, I've discovered full fat is there. The issues about fat are a debatable issue, and that I think the issue is well thought about and it's controversial. So I can't come in one way or another, but I can tell you what I do, and I go full fat, smaller amounts.
And you're a pretty healthy guy.
Yeah, no, I think I'm definitely healthy. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have a possible myth for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in North Tonawanda, New York. Hi.
I guess this is a question from an aging athlete, is the best way to put it.
Aging athlete. How old are you?
I'm in my mid-50s.
And what did you do for athlete? What sort of stuff did you do?
Well, I've been a runner all my life, track, cross-country, triathlons. But obviously, I was amateur level, But someone who's always been active. Mm-hmm. And the question I have is that I'm in my mid-50s, always a runner. And about 3 years ago, I went out for a run, and when I came back, I had just excruciating pain in both my hips. Mm-hmm. And that lasted a couple hours and went away. And then, so I held off for a couple days, went out for a run. And then when I came back for the next run, and it was probably like a 5 or 6K run, it wasn't real far. When I came back, I was sitting on the floor in my living room, and I could not even lift my feet off the floor. If you're sitting bent at an L shape and tried to lift your feet off the floor like an exercise, mm-hmm. I could not even lift either one off the floor. And wow. Then for the next 3 or 4 months after that, I had pain in my upper left thigh, mm-hmm. which at times was so severe I could hardly walk. Now, wow. It eventually subsided. And so now it's been like 3.5 years, and I can go out and run like a 5K or even a half marathon. And during that run, it is not there. I might feel it slightly if it starts or whatever, and then it'll go away. But the problem is, since I've had that in the past, I could maybe take a day off and run again. I would now have to wait 5-6 days to run again because I could feel the pain from that. So while it's subsided, it's never really gone away. And my concern is at some point it would return full force.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds to me like it might be a piriformis issue. And one of the things you can do is the piriformis stretch exercises. Piriformis muscle is this tiny little muscle that essentially we use when we run and we walk, and the sciatic nerve goes through there, and it causes lots and lots of problems. There's lots of pain syndromes that are basically related to this piriformis muscle. And it sounds to me like you stretched it and did it. And often this bothers people more in a sitting position than it does when they're actually walking and moving around, which is what you describe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so piriformis stretch can make a big difference. That's what I would recommend.
What is that stretch called?
It's called a piriformis stretch. Piriformis is P-Y-R-I-F-O-R-M-I-S. Go to YouTube University. That's what my son Zach calls YouTube. Calls it YouTube U.
Well, something like that might help. Like I said, it's always still there. I'm slightly.
I would do it every day. You do it 10 stretches. The stretch should last for about 30 to 45 seconds. You hold it for 30 to 45 seconds. Relax for 15 or 20 seconds. And then repeat it. So it's 45 seconds on, 15 seconds off. You can do 10 stretches on each side, the right side and the left side.
Okay.
It'll take you 3 to 5 minutes in the morning. Do it once in the morning, once in the evening. You might solve the whole problem.
All right, well, thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate that. And before we head out today, Zorba, we recently received this story from Randall from Salt Lake City, Utah. He writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, I actually enjoy tofu from time to time, but I have a humorous story about it that I heard from a colleague I met at a conference in Australia. She shared that as a graduate student at Oregon State University, she was the only vegan among her colleagues. One evening, on a research trip to eastern Oregon, as her party was preparing dinner, a storm came through that forced everyone to abandon their cooking to the safety of their tents. They emerged the next morning to find that animals had eaten everyone's food except her tofu hot dogs, which were left untouched. She figured the animals must be sending her a message. It was good for a laugh and the last of her vegan days. Keep up the great show."
That's hysterical. That's hysterical. They didn't even eat the tofu hot dogs. They said, "Yuck, we're not eating that."
It sounds right to me.
Yeah, it does.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or find us through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0507Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.